the board meeting hereby begins.
So why don't we quickly go around and just have everyone say who's here. So I'm Ellie Hassenfeld, Executive Director of GiveWell.
I'm Holden Karnowski. I'm on the board.
I'm Tom Rutledge. I'm on the board.
I'm Carrie Tuna. I'm on the board.
I'm Natalie Crispin. I'm the Interim Director of Operations.
Tim Ogden,
I'm Julia,
board member.
The board.
I'm Rob Reich, on the board.
Bridget Slipka, on the board.
Okay, well, wonderful. So we sent out, I sent out the agenda for today's meeting. We have very limited formal business that we need to conduct, so we're hoping to talk through our progress in 2017, plans for 2018, and answer any questions that you have in roughly the first hour and a bit. I think we hopefully have left more time than we need for some of the administrative items, that will be the board meeting. So unless anyone has anything they want to lead off with, I'll give a brief summary of the document that I shared, and then we can just dive into to questions.
Sounds good.
So, I think everyone hopefully had a chance to take a look at the document. I'd say overall, GiveWell made a lot of progress in 2017. In all domains, on research, we completed more research and than we ever have before. In operations, the big project was separating GiveWell and Open Philanthropy. While we still have a lot more work to do, we really began the process of building out our operations team to be what it needs to be. And in the middle of the year, we decided to put more of a focus on an outreach, meaning increasing how many donors know about GiveWell, and then ultimately the amount of money that goes to our recommendations. And so we just began that process last year, and it's one of our major focuses for this year. I don't want to walk through this whole document because I'd rather focus on the areas that people have questions about, but I think this is a year where we're aiming to do a fair amount of expansion. On the research side, what that means is trying to look into new areas, and especially areas that could potentially be significantly more cost-effective than the recommendations that we've made in the past. I think those are most likely to be areas that influence larger pools of funding, whether it's developing country governments or major aid agencies. In research, those are the primary, sort of a big area of expansion. While we're certainly still doing the important work of keeping our existing recommendations up to date and the process that has led to recommendations in the past, keeping that process going. And then on the on the outreach front, we're really just trying to put a lot of energy and focus into this challenge of significantly increasing the amount of money that GiveWell can direct. And I'm happy to talk more about what we're trying, what we've tried, what we've learned, and how we're thinking about it. But I think in the big picture, we just have a lot to learn about what is going to work to ultimately increase the amount of money that we move, and what approaches we'll have to try to learn. And I think it's going to be a while before we really know what's going to make the biggest difference. I'd say at a very high level, one of the big challenges that I think we face is just the balance between expansion into new areas, both in research and outreach, balancing that against sort of strengthening the underlying organization and the underlying process that we're already undertaking. I think that's a balance that we're trying to strike and do well on. But it's certainly a sort of an overarching tension that we feel between allocating our focus and energy towards expansion versus just I'd say more general strengthening of the processes and the research that we've done to date. With that, I really would rather kind of turn things over to the questions that people had. I know that Tim and Tom, you both added some questions in the document, and maybe others are have questions in their minds. Now I'd really just like to turn it over to you all for questions. I'll sort of pause briefly before I dive in, and we'll give people time, but otherwise I may just sort of walk through some of the questions in the document. But before I do that, does anyone have anything they'd like to throw out or any questions they'd like to ask?
This is Rob here. I didn't add any questions to the document, but I've got a few. So just add me to your question queue or however you like to organize the things that were added already.
Yeah, that sounds great. So I think what I'm going to do is as we go through this, I'll just, you know, I'm going to go right down the document and I'll ask people to sort of read their own questions so they can elaborate and explain on what they were thinking. And, you know, Rob, as we're going through, you know, feel free to jump in at the point where we're sort of hitting the place where you had questions.
Great.
So Tim, you had the first comment in the document about top charities' room for more funding. You know, I said it's a good thing that they have more room for more funding, but you had a question about that. Tim, we don't hear you, sorry.
Right, did that unmute now?
Yep, great.
Okay. So, you know, room for more funding at top charities can potentially be a good thing. It can also be a symptom of we're not moving as much money as we should be moving. So I just wanted a little bit more discussion about how do you tell when room for more funding is good and when room for more funding is a symptom of our not doing as well in outreach as we should be.
Yeah, so that's right. I mean, the big driver of more room for more funding for our top charities now is, you know, their success in being able to find opportunities for expansion that go beyond our capacity to move money to them. And so in this case, we see this as a good thing because groups like, you know, AMF and Malaria Consortium and Deworm the World have, and never mind Give Directly, which has also been successful, have found ways to, you know, if they were to have more money, would be able to put it to very good use. And so we see this as a really good thing because it sort of shows us that right now our ability to find outstanding giving opportunities is surpassing our ability to move money, and that's one of the reasons we want to try and move more money.
This is Rob. One of my questions is exactly on this point too. So I had picked up on that very same line that there is more room for funding than ever before with your top charities. Can you say just a bit more about what balance that is between the charities you've recommended for a couple years and their own expansion or growth in capacity or ability to absorb more donations, as opposed to adding in the two new organizations that you're recommending?
It's a combination. So we filled the funding gaps for our new top charities, HKI and No Lean Season. That was in total a little under $20 million. So that was definitely a contributor. I'm forgetting what the numbers are, but our room for more money moved was considerably higher than $20 million. So it also included significant expansion or our confidence in giving more to other groups as well that we've recommended for several years.
And then based on your interactions with these charities, what type of effect do you think there is of appearing on GiveWell's recommended list and perhaps acquiring some confidence as a result that funding streams will come in that perhaps weren't as strong as before, and knowing that you look specifically at this criteria of room for funding? So what type of wind in the sails of the charities that are on their recommended list is GiveWell putting into them so that they are more aggressive in building their own capacity?
I definitely think that our past funding has led organizations to consider new expansion possibilities. So we are the major funder for Deworm the World. They also have several other major funders, but we're the majority. And that has led them to look to new countries such as Nigeria and Pakistan that they don't have restricted funding for. And I don't think they would be in a position to have explored those opportunities if they didn't think there was a chance that GiveWell would provide funding for it. And you know, similar situations at the Against Malaria Foundation, where they are engaging in more discussions because they have a lot of money in the bank and think that they will continue to raise money due to GiveWell's recommendation. So I definitely think that's true. And then I think like some of our funding has more directly built capacity at organizations. So for example, the large Good Ventures grant to Give Directly, that was specifically focused on building capacity in fundraising and in building partnerships with bilaterals and other major funders.
That all seems great. And I mean, the stories that GiveWell can tell internally with your recommended charities and externally in public relations about this would seem to me excellent to tell, especially if, as brand new charities get onto the recommended list, part of what GiveWell might be able to communicate to these charities is that in future years, if the charity remains on the recommended list, that GiveWell would be eager to learn how to expand the capacity of these charities to absorb more money while still maintaining the effective delivery of services. And that's meant as a question. How much does that happen already, or with say, the two that came onto the list this year?
So it's definitely a goal of ours to look for opportunities to explicitly build capacity at organizations. We found relatively few of those, I would say, so far. And it's been more about organizations believing that they'll have more funding in the future, although we also are trying to walk a fine line because we don't want to provide... We want to have maximum flexibility to change our recommendations, and so one of the messages that we give to charities is don't rely on this funding repeating. We want to give you several years of funding up front so that you can plan and you're not planning just 1 year at a time, but also don't plan to have additional GiveWell directed funding. And so that certainly has its drawbacks in terms of giving them the confidence to build up, but we found it important to communicate that so that we're not on the hook for more funding than we think is impactful at that organization.
Okay, thanks.
Great. So I'm just gonna keep scrolling down. Tim, you have the next question around incubation grants.
Yeah, and apparently I still have to learn to hit comment on my comment. You talked about expanding the incubation grants program. I mean, there are two ways to expand. One is the number of organizations. Second is the amount of money. I presume that this is a bit of both. But where do you see that going? Are we now trying to hold constant? Are we going to continue to try to grow the number of organizations receiving incubation grants? Do we see that as a larger portion of what we're, I guess in the 2017 discussion, we talked about the possibility of opening GiveWell incubation grants to the general public as a, here are organizations that we think that we're not recommending, but we are recommending for an incubation grant and directing funds that way. So was that clear enough?
I'll just try to respond and tell me if it hits the sorts of things you're thinking about. The main expansion in this program was a few new organizations that we added into that program. The dollars went up a bit, but were relatively constant from year to year. Right now, the big bottleneck to expanding that program is finding more opportunities that we think are really promising and frankly better giving opportunities than our existing top charities. Our existing top charities are really great, and so the bar is fairly high for one of these incubation grants programs to be something that we think is a better bet than where the money would otherwise go to just one of our top charities. When we find those, we're really excited about them, but it's the challenge of finding them that's the key bottleneck. I think if we were in a position where we had many more incubation opportunities than sort of the current level of funding, we would be doing more to try and find more funding. I mean, that could come from the Good Ventures sort of global health and development pot. It could also come from other donors, either ones who are like currently part of GiveWell's core donor group, or others who I think are actually interested in the sort of smaller, more innovative, less tried and true giving opportunities. And I think if we were to find those, I suspect we'd be able to raise money for them because there's a decent amount of interest in those sorts of opportunities. And you know, so right now though, we're mostly taking a somewhat reactive approach to building that program further. And what I mean by that is, you know, we don't have anyone whose job it is to go out and identify more incubation grant opportunities or, you know, find potential places for funding. Instead, we maintain, you know, close relationships with a lot of people in the space and a lot of organizations, and we're looking out for those opportunities. When they come in, we evaluate them. That's sort of an ongoing process, but it's at a fairly, you know, it's something that we're not currently trying to explicitly expand far beyond its current state, beyond the other types of research expansion that I mentioned in this document, which I think would end up being incubation grants, and that's expansion into areas that focus on, you know, policy advocacy or potentially influencing aid agency spending.
And I guess I'm next too.
Yep.
So your comment on the improving the process for staying up to date in top charities updates with Natalie, which I was unclear if that meant like literally with Natalie or with Natalie's team, but regardless, with Natalie now being interim director of operations, is that, are we going to need to retrain there?
So we have made some changes this year, whereas last year I was doing a significant amount of the analysis and writing myself. I plan to do very little or none of that this year and delegate that to the other people on the research team, while still being the reviewer of that work and providing guidance along the way. Also, we've made progress on the director of operations search and are very much hoping to hire someone into that role, so that I would go back to focusing on the research work that I've done in the past.
Yeah, and so I'd say, I mean, I think the short answer to this is, like, it does rely heavily on Natalie specifically or someone else in that, you know, sort of research management role. And we can't, in a sustainable way, rely on Natalie to do both the interim director of operations and the research management role that she has to play today. And so we expect to change that situation by hiring a director of operations. That's our plan.
What are your probabilities and timelines for a director of ops hiring?
Thanks, Holden.
I actually want to know. I feel like what you're saying is a little out of date with what I knew. So
yeah. So yeah. What is our probabilities? I think that we have a. So. Let me just say this, which, Holden, you know from the open fill search, but I think it's like very relevant to the GiveWell Director of Operations search. I think the role of Director of Operations is it's like somewhat idiosyncratic and specific to the organization. And so I think, unlike, you know, most of our hires, where I'd say historically our you know, acceptance rate, if we make an offer, has been north of 80%, I really wouldn't be surprised with the Director of Operations if it's, you know, below 50%. Because you know, in the interview process, as we're going through it with a number of candidates, you know, we are spending a lot of time asking them questions in the interview process, and we've given them time to ask us questions, but they haven't asked very, in my opinion, very critical questions of what it would actually be like to work here. And I think that what may be happening is they're waiting until they get a job offer to really try to figure out what the job would be like for them. And in many cases, I think that it's that part of the process that helps them figure out whether this is in fact the sort of job that they're looking for. Because director of operations can mean, you know, a lot of different things. And even when we try to describe it, I think it can take them some time to figure it out. So with that in mind, that I think, you know, there's something like a, you know, I don't know, 50% chance that anyone we make an offer to ultimately accepts it. You know, I think there's probably something like a 50% chance that we make an offer. There's a 70% chance we make an offer to someone in the next 6 weeks. And then, you know, probably, and maybe a 50% chance that we'd be willing to make like two offers in the next 6 weeks. And then I would just apply my, like, you know, 50%, you know, odds of acceptance to that.
Wait, there's a 70% chance to make two offers or 70% chance of each one?
70% chance of each one.
Okay.
So that's like 50% total of any offer. And there's a 50% chance of acceptance. But you know, we're kind of, you know, this process has been open for you know, since the end of last year, and we've had, you know, one person go all the way to the end of the process, and then we decided not to make an offer. And we have two people who are in, you know, fairly late stages of the process right now, and then a few others who are in sort of like past the very initial stages, but seem, you know, somewhat promising. And that's out of a total of, I think, 15 people that we've interviewed for the job to date. Okay. I'm scrolling down. Tim, you're up again.
Yay. I don't really understand the betterment option, and it specifically seems curious that that's a pretty large figure for what I thought was a personal financial management tool for automated investing. And second, then on BitPay, I suppose I shouldn't be surprised, but just wondering how we are handling Bitcoin donations. Are we carrying any Bitcoin risk? Are we converting to cash immediately?
Sure. So Betterment, that they launched a service to allow their users to easily make stock donations, whereas for most stock donors, there's a process of filling out a few different forms and going through brokerages. Whereas with Betterment, I think it's pretty simple. You like click a button and you say which of the charities you want to go to, and they reached out to us, I believe, to see if we wanted to be part of that initial launch. And so we were one of a small number of organizations that were part of that. BitPay for Bitcoin, we do convert to cash. I'm actually not sure offhand whether it's like totally immediate or whether our staff are going in daily or weekly to convert. But we certainly are not holding that in Bitcoin for any extended period.
Do you have a sense of how our reporting on deductions happens? Is it, given how volatile that is, are we issuing a receipt for the value of the Bitcoin on the day it was received, or are we issuing for the value when we convert?
So I'm like 90% confident in this answer, but I'm pretty sure we're treating it just like stock donations, where we say you donated 0.3 Bitcoin on this date, and we did not provide any goods or services in return, and then the donor is responsible for valuing that on their tax form.
Okay.
This is Bridget, and just further clarification, the stock donations also are sold quickly, correct?
That's right.
Along with the Bitcoin?
Yes. That is a manual process where we sell it as soon as we receive notice that we have it. It's not totally immediately, but it is very quick.
The next question up doesn't have a name, but if you want to read yours, go for it. If you put in the question about social ops staff and being aligned with the org's mission, or if not, I'm happy to read it if I don't hear anyone jump in soon. So this question was just that I guess some organizations in the effective altruism community are debating whether or not it's important for operations staff to be interested in and aligned with the organization's mission in order for us, you know, for them to be hired at the organization, and how has GiveWell dealt with this? And as a general rule, I think it's been really important for all of our staff to be aligned with, you know, GiveWell's core values of like honesty, integrity, transparency. But I don't think it has been particularly important that, you know, every single staff member is sort of personally invested in GiveWell's long-term mission. And you know, we, I think overall our operations team is really great. And I think there's a lot of divergence across the operations team. And I think even across other parts of the organization, you know, the research team of people who have sort of more and less alignment with sort of GiveWell's core, like what GiveWell's mission is. So in short, I'd say this doesn't, the alignment with the mission has not been particularly important in my opinion, but the alignment with sort of the core values has been extremely important.
That was me. I don't know why my name didn't show. Thanks.
Okay. Sorry, Julia. All right. Tim, I think you're up.
You did such a good job of reading the other questions. So the document that's linked here about the plans for 2018 doesn't sort of directly connect what's there to the work that was done in 2017 on staff satisfaction. I've read through some of that, but not closely enough or recently enough to make a direct connection between what's on that document and what surfaced from that exercise. And so wondering how directly connected are the two? Are there other things in that document that are part of planning that aren't on the internal document? Does that make sense?
I think so. So, I mean, that document isn't directly connected back in any material way. You know, I think the document you're looking at is the you know, the operations team plan, and that doesn't directly link back to the sort of staff satisfaction work that we did in the middle of last year. You know, I think the biggest, so let me go off on a bit of a tangent, and then let me know if you think this addresses the question. You know, I think the biggest challenge that we're facing right now with respect to staff satisfaction is, you know, the tension I was describing before between sort of strengthening our existing work versus expansion into new domains. And the way in which we face this challenge, like very concretely, is trading off between you know, things like researching new areas, expanding our outreach efforts versus putting more energy and investment into direct personnel management. You know, everything from training, evaluation, coaching, you know, management, assessment. And you know, we're trying to strike a balance between expansion and that focus on the ongoing work. But I think, you know, there sort of is almost a, right now, I think like something of a one-to-one trade-off, you know, between our ability to do more expansion and our ability to focus more on the staff management. Because the folks who are doing the expansion work are the same ones who've been doing that management. Now, I'd say overall, like, you know, so overall, I think, you know, staff satisfaction is like really good. There certainly is not, it's not the case that there's no one who is dissatisfied in any way, but I mean, overall, you know, we just went through our annual review period where we asked every single staff member, you know, what, you know, how are you feeling about your job? What do you like about GiveWell? What do you not like about GiveWell? What would cause you to like leave and look for something else? And overall, I mean, I think we're just in a, you know, fairly strong position with, you know, we certainly have room for improvement, and I think management is that, you know, primary one. But overall, I mean, I think the right picture to have is like staff here is like happy and engaged rather than, you know, kind of like unhappy and worried and, you know, disgruntled. Okay. Tim, I don't know. Tim, we can go on to you. Rob, I just want to make sure, you know, we don't have your comments here, so please jump in if we get to things that you like. But we're moving on to the outreach section now. Do you have any, do you want to jump in there at all?
Okay, well, I somehow am not, I'm not sure where these comments are listed. Maybe just send me the link for that, and maybe, is it on some Google page? And I can follow along if I'm just repeating things, but yeah, and one of the things which, based just on the agenda and my review of the documents, I was curious to ask about was the last board meeting we had some lengthy conversations about the importance of investing in outreach, and in particular hiring there, and we had initially had a little bit of conversation with the kind of person you're looking for, and I didn't see any big update on the hiring other than the framework of thinking about outreach. So I was curious to hear more about the hire there.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe, Tom, this relates to your question. So do you want to also lay that out?
Yeah, well, I guess there are a couple, getting into the outreach stuff, there were a couple, maybe categories, at least two categories of questions. One was, there were references into the outreach section, in the outreach section about a hiring head of growth. And earlier in the summary, it says something about hiring a team. I'm kind of curious about what the staffing and resourcing plans are for outreach in general. And then a couple other questions related to, it seems as though outreach is beginning to take the shape of kind of a methodical, analytical marketing process. And I'm kind of wondering how you guys are thinking about that. I got a couple of specific questions around that, but I guess to keep the continuity, why don't we focus on the staffing for outreach first?
Yeah, so, long term, over the next, few years, I'd say like my best guess is that we're gonna, see some significant increase in the number of staff GiveWell has devoted to outreach. Right now we only have one dedicated outreach staff person, that's Catherine. And I think we're going to have to, we're going to grow the team, if we're able to succeed in finding good outreach activities to undertake. There's basically the first hire that we're trying to make is something that we call head of growth. The idea there is that the most people, their sort of one of their first interactions with GiveWell is something that happens sort of online. They read a news article, they land on our website, and I think there is a group of people in sort of broadly speaking the growth community that have thought a lot about how you make those interactions as effective as possible to communicate what you need to people who are landing on your website, and then long term convert them into donors, and then sort of over the very long term try to so to speak maximize the lifetime value of those particular customers. We worked with this marketing consultant at the end of last year, and I thought that the skill set that he brought to GiveWell was a type of skill set that I think could be very effective in helping us do this web-oriented work well. So just to make this like concrete, to give one example, right now I think the GiveWell website is basically set up for two types of donors. Donor number one is the person who comes and just, it's like 11:45 p.m. on December 31st, and they want to see the top charities and donate immediately. There's a big link that says, top charities or donate. So it's kind of like the flow is optimized for that sort of person. And then it's also there for the person who just wants to like read everything and click all around and read a bunch of stuff. And I think my instinct, and I don't really know this for sure yet, but my instinct is that, most of the larger donors who've supported our recommendations, don't really fall into either of those two groups. When the vast majority of the money that we move comes from very large donors, so it's about 80% of the money comes from donors giving $10,000 or more, and those folks don't tend to kind of like land on the website and then give $50,000 on their credit card after spending 30 minutes. Instead, it's like a much longer process. As part of this head of growth recruiting process, we're trying to find someone who has some experience and some ability to think through that sort of challenge. The sort of challenge of figuring out what sort of information we should give to our potential customers the first time they land to sort of get them to be the donors or the larger donors over the long term. But I hope that this is the this person should also be one who can think about ways to acquire new donors, reach out in other areas. But that's sort of like the sort of first hire that we're explicitly trying to make in this domain. Just very briefly want to talk about another type of area here, which is I also mentioned in the document, but it's the sort of post donation efforts that we make to follow up with donors. This is an area where I think what we've done historically has been kind of okay, but far from excellent. And there really is, I think folks who have experience as development professionals in the nonprofit sector have a good handle on what standard practices are for following up with donors about, you know, on a regular basis. And Bridget, you and I have talked a lot about this, but just kind of getting the very basics down on staying in touch with our donor community. And so for now, we have, you know, just hired a consultant to help us think this through. But I imagine that's another area where I'd expect us to have to hire. So in that area being, you know, someone who kind of leads the post-donation follow-up with donor efforts. And so then when I imagine this, like over some sort of medium term, it looks something like, you know, we have to eventually hire a director of outreach, and, you know, they probably have sort of reporting into them, I don't know what we would call these positions, but the, post-donation sort of development group. And then there's also the, you know, sort of like web acquisition growth-oriented group, you know, and in both cases, I think, you know, those two people sort of report into a director of outreach. It's very easy to imagine the need for both of those folks having, you know, teams that are working on this project. On the development side, our current set of people who follow up with donors is significantly under-resourced, meaning we don't have enough people to reach out to the donors that we have as frequently as we should, based on standard best practices that are, you know, Bridget has told me about and others have as well. And then, you know, for the head of growth, hopefully the path that takes is we, you know, figure out which approaches to marketing are working best. And then we, you know, hire people who are, really great at one of those domains, whether it's, you know, search engine marketing or it's, advertising or it's, content marketing or there's all these different approaches that we can take, but we eventually can like hire the people who can, really drive those individual areas forward. So that was a lot. So let me pause there, see what folks think.
So Rob here, can you say a little bit about whether you've interviewed people or what's the, is the challenge in hiring someone the same as you were describing for the director of operations? So just give us an update on the status of the search.
Yeah, sure.
And I got a separate question or two after that, but go ahead, Ellie.
Yeah, so we've had, you know, a handful of candidates, and I think this role's a little bit different. You know, here, there's a big growth community in the Bay Area. We're in a good place to find people like that. The challenge, I think we have a few challenges. I mean, one is a lot of a lot of people want to work at a tech company that could become, the next unicorn and, you know, Givewell's a nonprofit. So, you know, we don't offer that sort of like financial upside that they could have. So we need someone who's excited about the impact that Givewell has. We also, I think, need someone who has the experience and ability to play a more strategic role, but also the willingness and ability to get their hands dirty on day one. And so just finding someone who's at the right, right place on the seniority spectrum, I think is probably like the big challenge for this role. I've interviewed a handful of people. They're sort of like moving along through the process. We also retained this firm called, which is essentially like a sort of outsourced internal recruiting team. So as opposed to like sort of a standard headhunter where they take a cut of the person they find's first year salary, you know, this firm is sort of actively trying to source candidates, by looking at their LinkedIn profiles and then sort of bringing them in. And so we've had a, you know, fairly good flow of candidates through them. Basically the assessment is whether they're able to think through this problem that we face in a, you know, intelligent, strategic way. And then Will, the marketing consultant that we are still working with on a more limited basis, is serving as sort of the technical check, so to speak, about whether they have the, you know, kind of concrete experience to do the things that we really need them to be able to do.
Okay, so timeline in terms of, when you think you might have someone on board?
I think it's potentially like longer than director of operations. The search is, you know, a little bit earlier. And, you know, at least in the case of director of operations, you know, we've had this role here before, and so it's easier. I think it's like easier for me to think about, you know, what are the most likely paths to success versus paths to failure. And in the head of growth, I think it's like a little more challenging to figure that out because it's a newer position. I really hope that we have someone in place, you know, in the next 6 months. And, you know, if we don't have someone in place in the next 6 months, you know, that means we really need to rethink, you know, what our approach is to, you know, filling this position.
Okay. And then as a piece of your thinking about all this, I had suggested a conversation with Paul Brest and folks at the Effective Philanthropy Lab. So, I mean, I can get a download about what happened there if you off the phone call. But I'm curious about what types of things that fall in between. I mean, sort of what I took away from the way you framed the aspiration for the search is that across these three different pieces of the funnel, as you call it, the acquisition, the conversion, and then the retention, you know, you have a lot of the money moves comes from a small number of very high figure donors, big donors, and the effort to try to convert someone who visits the website for the first time for a $50,000 credit card donation, I realize, is a pretty steep ask of anybody. So I'm just wondering where there are opportunities that lay in between cultivating additional large donors and simply having a kind of retail approach to anybody who visits the website. And what I have in mind there are things like what the Effective Philanthropy Lab is aiming to do, namely meet on balance wealthy people where they are, and wealth advisors, donor advised funds, things like that. So I'm wondering to what extent any of this kind of thing is figuring into your thinking about the outreach position.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just a ton of things that, you know, I hope we're able to, like, more systematically experiment with over time. You know, that includes everything you just said, Rob, Tom, it includes a lot of the things, you know, you mentioned in your comment. And, you know, I think it, you know, for some of them, so, like, you know, Tom, you were talking about, video and more visually rich posts. I think that's an example of the sort of thing that probably our head of growth ideally should be able to really contribute to. You know, Rob, with partnerships with, you know, donor advised funds or wealth advisors meeting donors there, I think that probably, like, that may or may not be, you know, the head of growth type profile is the sort of person who could be helpful there, but probably is not going to really lead those efforts. And, you know, I think the short answer is, like, all of that is still on the list and is, you know, remains promising. And it's sort of just, you know, not the top thing on the list for this year. And the main, you know, the main thinking there is just, I think right now we have a fairly, like, we have a combination of, like, a decent amount of inbound interest in what we do, but a really, like, leaky bucket once people land on the website and then after they give. And so I really want to try to shore up that leaky bucket. But that is not, like, the sort of end of the story. That's just the beginning of the story. And then hopefully we'll be able to, you know, turn things around and kind of move more into the, you know, trying to drive as many people to the, you know, to our service as we can. You know, just two other things to add there. I mean, that kind of play into my mind there. I mean, I think some of what we're going to do with the head of growth is going to, you know, maybe more similar to, you know, some of the things, Rob, that you know, you're thinking of. So just to give one example, you know, I think one of the challenges we have with donors is one that is probably going to be familiar to all of you, which is, you know, people come to us and they say, you know, GiveWell just looks, like, really narrow. Like, you have 9 top charities. They all work, you know, doing similar things in Africa. Like, this doesn't intuitively seem like the sort of place that is going to help me make good giving decisions. And so I think, like, one of the things we're trying to think about is, you know, what could we do something to bring those people in and talk to them about the causes they're interested in? Not because we are going to have great recommendations in those areas or that's our goal, but just as an entree to conversation. And I do think that's a project that, you know, we're considering. If someone says, you know, so for example, like, we've thought about the possibility of having, you know, some sort of offer either, you know, on our website or via, you know, other places like wealth managers or advised funds, where we say, like, you know, if and we'd have to phrase this in the right way, but, you know, if you're planning to give at least X, we're happy to spend, you know, several hours talking to you and sharing what we've learned and seeing if we can be helpful on your cause. with, you know, and our hope would be that that would be the vehicle through which we'd be able to start a conversation and eventually have the person become, you know, more of a GiveWell donor. So, you know, that's, you know, one of the type of approaches that I could, you know, imagine us taking to sort of expand into like that, you know, that area a bit.
That sounds good. I'm excited about that. And I also think that I'd be eager. I hear you saying a bunch of this already, Ellie, that having a kind of an experimental approach to see what kind of hypotheses someone might generate about the leaky bucket, as you put it, or as opposed to trying to go various places to acquire people, perhaps. But what's on my mind is trying to think through hypotheses about why the bucket might be leaky, you know, at a place like Stanford or any large and kind of familiar charity. My suspicion is that the person whose job is probably called stewardship to maintain the connection, the high personal touch with existing donors, has a whole bunch of either, you know, material things to offer, give to the Stanford athletic program and you get some nice seats for the football game, or lots of high personal touch, customized outreach about new opportunities for giving and come meet with this person on campus or whatever it turns out to be. And GiveWell seems to me quite appropriately to have, you know, relatively few of those things. And I doubt that you're about to go a charity water route and you know, provide GPS coordinates for wells that are being built somewhere on behalf of somebody. I would want to see an experimental approach to what ordinarily goes under the heading of stewardship, because GiveWell has always been such a distinctive, you know, value opportunity, so to speak, in the field of charity givers, that a standard stewardship approach, I worry, might not be the right one for GiveWell.
Yeah, and so I you know, agree completely that as we go into all of this, you know, we go in knowing that we don't know what is and isn't going to work, and we're going to be trying to experiment and track results so we can then focus on the areas that seem like they're working the best and avoid the ones that aren't.
Can I just make one comment? I'm sorry. Rob, am I interrupting you?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, just Ellie, just since you raised the point about visuals, the point about visuals is not intended to be micromanaging. I know there historically, and maybe I'm the only person that remembers this, is there's been an edginess or apprehension about using images in GiveWell's research, because a lot of charities use images in a very sort of kind of maudlin, emotionally targeted way, and I think we were concerned about that wasn't an approach and that wasn't a profile we wanted to have with donors. I generally agree with that. I've definitely softened my view in general on images, because I think certainly data visualization and photographs can be pretty neutral and pretty journalistic in nature. And I think a more thoughtful use of that would both kind of supplement the research and I think help engage potential GiveWell, existing and potential GiveWell donors. So I just wanted to sort of throw that as, if there's still a prohibition against images, I'd like to see that struck from the bylaws.
There is no prohibition against images in the bylaws. Yeah, I mean, we're starting this, you know, what is really like a sort of fairly new endeavor to think about how we do outreach that, you know, that works for GiveWell. And that means that we have to, you know, we're going to be trying a lot of things. I mean, as you saw in the sort of outreach review document I put together, you know, some of the things we tried worked really well and some of them did not work at all. And, you know, that's what we expect to see. And, you know, I think for us, we're going to be trying some things that we haven't in the past. And we just need to make sure that they are, at the very least, you know, consistent with GiveWell's, you know, core values and like who we are. And within those, that bound, I mean, images can definitely fit. We just need to find the right approach to it.
Tom, if you haven't been on our top charities page recently, we recently redid it to include charity logos. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. There's logos.
I don't think of that far.
All right, let's see. Tim, do you want to jump back in? You had a question on the outreach piece that we haven't hit yet.
So I would just say here on an ongoing basis, I think it's useful, would be useful to have a set of metrics that are clarifying on this issue of new donors, retained donors, retained dollars, donor growth. You know, I'm not exactly sure what exactly they are, but you know, to this point of the funnel, is we should be tracking and recording on that of how much of our dollars have we retained, how many of our donors have we retained, how many of them have given more, so are we succeeding there, and where are we in the bringing in the new donors to start the funnel over again?
Yeah, totally agreed. And so, you know, one piece of the what I've described as sort of the donor retention effort is actually an effort to you know, improve the quality and our ability to analyze data in our Salesforce where we're recording all of this. And so, yeah, we're hopefully going to make a lot of progress on being in a better position to grab data from it in the future than we have been to date. But the metrics you laid out sound good to me.
Can we talk about influencing governments and NGOs?
Sure.
Because that strikes me as being, I don't know if you're thinking about that as part of outreach, but I think that is part of outreach.
Yeah, so let me just say, I mean, I think we've mostly covered the questions in the document so that people have listed. So let's, I think from here, we'll answer Tom this question. There is another question about like betterment that if anyone wants to raise, and again, happy to chat through it.
Well,
and then
mine too, actually.
So then let's just talk through those questions, and then it can just sort of be more open to whatever people want to raise now. So you're asking about kind of influencing governments.
Yeah, I mean, I know you guys have begun to sort of make forays into that. There seems to be some excitement about it, so I'm just kind of curious where that stands.
Yeah, so structurally, we're thinking about this as part of research rather than outreach. Not that it really matters, but the reason we've done that is I think the sort of work that we need to do is more like research-oriented work, like figure out what seems like it's most likely to be effective and why and what's cost-effective, you know, rather than, I don't know, what I'm bucketing more as marketing. So just to take the two in turn, we've made more progress on the policy-oriented work. So this is, I guess, like trying to advocate to developing country governments to change what they're doing. The approach that we've taken is we've said, you know, which areas seem like they could be the most cost-effective. So, you know, what are the biggest problems? How many people do they affect? And then are there opportunities for GiveWell to make recommendations in those areas? And the ones that we've looked at briefly to date are tobacco control, lead remediation, and we've looked a little bit at sort of road safety related issues. Traffic accidents are one of the leading causes of death and disability in the developing world, so it's a kind of huge burden of death and disability, which is why it potentially is very promising. In all three of those cases, we kind of talked to most of the, you know, many of the some of the academics and some of the sort of most promising organizations in the space. None of them immediately seemed to be like amazing, clear fits as like a great opportunity. And so we're just going to kind of keep going down our list as we, to see whether there are any other areas that kind of pop out more than these three, that the organizations have in these three. But, you know, one of our goals is by the end of the year to have, you know, 5 to 10 write-ups that are public on our website from these investigations. We made a grant, I should say, you know, last year and posted a blog post about it today to a group that does policy advocacy to try to reduce pesticide suicide. So in agricultural economies, often people have very easy access to pesticide, and they can, you know, make this, you know, what the researchers think is a fairly like impulsive decision to ingest the pesticide, which you know then often kills them. And so that's an example of one grant where you can sort of read a little bit about our rationale in that case.
This is a really ignorant question because I'm just not in this world. But are these kinds of arrangements common, and is there sort of a playbook for becoming a partner to a government agency that's looking for research help?
That's a good question. You know, I've talked to some of the people who have like tried to play that, you know, that role in the past, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're at least learning that it's, maybe this was your prior going in, but that it's a research function and you kind of lead with we have novel research or deeper research than you would see elsewhere. We want to present it to you. Like that's, it sounds like that's the door opener.
Yeah, I mean, I think the approach is like we have an approach to research that might be different that could be helpful to people making, you know, these decisions. I don't think in any of these cases we have the off-the-shelf research that we can just like share with someone that gives them the answer they need.
It is possible that there's another path here where you go meet with congressmen and senators and get them to lobby the USAID agency, but that's a, you know, maybe not where our value add is.
Yep.
Any other questions or comments on this document or sort of other general GiveWell stuff?
This is Bridget. I have a question, I guess, sort of on the leadership part of the last piece of this document.
Sure.
I think in a previous meeting, we talked, Ellie, about your division of time between how much time you spent on research versus outreach versus operations, and I wondered if you had an update there, whereabouts you're spending most of your, or within what ratios you're spending your time.
Yeah, so it's, I'd say it's like roughly speaking, though I'd have to like pull up the numbers, I think I'm about a third on outreach, you know, like 25% on research, and then the remaining, yeah, so I'd say it's like probably like 35% outreach, 25% research, and then the remaining, 40% is split between, operations, and then something that I don't exactly know how to define, but like sort of general organizational improvement, which, or like personal improvement in my role as executive director, rather than sort of keeping the lights on. Very roughly it's kind of like, so it's spread pretty evenly across the different domains. Also it's something that I track, so kind of been happy to give people like exact numbers if anyone is really interested. And I should say very limited open fill time. Like I'd say, close to zero, except in cases where like, I'm talking to Holden about something or someone on open fill has some question about, recruiting that I can be helpful with.
That's helpful, thanks.
So why don't we move on and just nail down the administrative items, and while we're doing that, we can, if anyone has any other questions that come up, we can cover them, with some of the remaining time at the end.
Okay, great. So we have three things to go over. One is the draft minutes from the last board meeting in October. So this is just formally approving the minutes that we've posted a draft of on the website. There's some redactions from the document that I linked to because it involved the transaction with the Open Philanthropy Project, and parts of that were confidential. And so I believe we do this as part of just following our bylaws and documenting this for the purposes of our audit. So. I guess if one of the board members could call a vote on this.
Where's the written material accompanying this?
So if you go to the agenda, it's okay. Attachment B. Oh, I guess before we vote, are there any questions or concerns about the draft minutes? Okay, great. Someone in the room?
You want someone to call a vote?
Sure.
Rob calls a vote on approving the draft minutes.
And sorry, I haven't been as involved in this. Does someone need to second it?
Tom seconds.
Great.
Okay. So maybe we'll just go around in the room first and then those joining by technology.
Carrie votes yes.
Tom votes yes.
Holden votes yes.
Ellie votes yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Julia?
Yes.
Bridget?
Yes.
And Rob?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Okay, and then there's two resolutions that were attached as Exhibit 2 and 3. The first one was previously voted on in a slightly different form. So this is an amendment to the bylaws. The first paragraph of that Section 2 was voted on and approved, and the second paragraph was previously in the bylaws, but was left off of this new version and is important. So we're proposing to just reenact that part of it. And the second part allows the executive director to delegate authority to sign checks and notes so that he or she does not have to personally sign the checks and notes.
What are notes? Just out of curiosity.
I don't know.
Is that like a legal term in bylaws or something? Or?
Could be like an agreement to pay, maybe?
Yeah, it's any agreement to send funds that isn't a direct cash form. So it could be a bond issue or an IOU of any sort.
Got it.
And Tim moves to approve or moves to vote or whatever it is I'm supposed to be doing to get us the vote. That's what I do.
Can I second it?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. A second.
All right. Let's go around again.
Carrie votes yes.
Tom votes yes.
Colton votes yes.
Ellie votes yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Julia?
Yes.
Bridget?
Yes.
And Rob?
Yes.
Great. Thanks. Okay. And then the third one is something new. So as you're all aware, every quarter we send you an email asking for approval to send out grants based on restricted funds. And we are proposing to create a subcommittee to replace the full board vote. And some context here is that if it's a vote by email or any written vote, we need approval from every board member in the current bylaws, but also just by nonprofit regulation, unless there's a subcommittee designated for this. So to make this process a little simpler, we're requesting that we create a three-person subcommittee who is responsible for this. And I would note that this does not cover any case where we would be granting out unrestricted funds, so reallocating funds that could be used for operating costs to grants, but just covers cases where funds were restricted either to supporting a specific organization, and these are top charities or organizations that we have previously discussed, such as the partnership with the Effective Altruism Foundation, or the decision on how we grant out discretionary funds, so funds that donors have given to us and said, GiveWell can decide how to grant these out. And the proposal is to have the subcommittee constituted as Holden, Tom, and Julia. Are there any questions on this?
This is Rob. I have one simple question. Will the whatever funds are then directed to the grants committee for approval, can the rest of the board get an inventory of such approvals at our annual or quarterly or whatever the frequency of our regular board meetings are, just so we have a sense about how much business this takes up and the amount?
Yes, so what would be helpful there? Would it be amount given to each organization, total amount given in any round, some details of why we decided on the discretionary allocation, all of that?
Well, just an inventory of the individual transactions. I don't think, for my purposes, I don't need any text. I'll just ask the members of the committee if I'm subcommittee if I have any questions. So literally just a a piece of the agenda for every board meeting could be a report from the grants committee that included whatever number of transactions were approved in this manner, which typically is never been more than five in any quarter, as I can recall. Is that roughly right?
Five grants to individual organizations?
This task has historically been conducted by the entire board, and my recollection is that we haven't ever been asked to approve more than five of these in any particular time between board meetings. Maybe my memory's off about that, or am I misunderstanding something about the request here?
Out a quarterly request, an occasional off-schedule request, and then within each of those requests, there's usually, the number of top charities,
that's right.
Usually, and
right.
A couple, right. and standout charities, so talking about 15 grants or something.
Right, so I was thinking about requests, not individual distributions, but...
Okay, so maybe...
Yeah, just a simple inventory about the work of the committee, subcommittee that's conducted this way. Nothing to add a huge amount of work or any work at all to you, Natalie, or whomever would be responsible for including this on the
That's very easy to do. I just wanted to make sure that I understood what information would be helpful.
This is Bridget. I definitely like the idea of this and think it maybe Natalie will save you some time in chasing after board members such as myself who sometimes need an occasional reminder to vote.
I move for a vote.
A second.
Carrie votes yes.
Tom votes yes.
Alden votes yes.
Ellie votes yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Julia?
Yes.
Bridget?
Yes.
And Rob?
Yes.
Great. Thanks. That was all of the administrative items.
So then what do you want to just tell people at the next board meeting?
Oh, right. So just wanted to remind people that the next board meeting is the annual board meeting in which we encourage in-person attendance here at our San Francisco office. And that we'll be soon sending out a scheduling email for that. And I expect that we'll do the same as we've done in past years of reimbursing travel expenses. Please let me know if you have any questions or concerns about that or if none of the proposed dates work and we'll see what we can do because we'd love to have you all here.
Is the next board meeting the one when we talk about executive compensation?
Yes, executive compensation and the budget versus actuals and forward-looking budget. I think those are the main things.
Okay, because I know I gave myself some homework a board meeting or two ago, and I just haven't done yet about evaluation, so I will follow up on that. Sorry.
Do I move or do I just declare it adjourned?
I think you can just declare.
I declare it adjourned. The
nice.
Meeting, that is.
All right. Well, great. Thank you, everybody. Have a good rest
Thank
of
you.
Your days.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.